So that opens our conference today. Now, thank you for the warm applause. Now Simon Harris would be speaking, but unfortunately he can't be here, so he's speaking after lunch. So now I would like to introduce a very special lady. Now, quite a while back, people sent me messages, quite a few messages. I woke up and I had some text messages and I had some WhatsApps. I had some emails saying that there was a very nice lady from Denmark who would like to talk to me. And this lady had made an impassioned video on her first YouTube channel, which is now sadly gone, saying that she would like to talk to me. And this lady is someone who is so very courageous, so very committed to speaking the truth. She is someone that was part of a movement filled with corruption, part of a movement where the people were being treated unfairly. And although she faced threats of bullying, although she faced horrible words online and even threats of violence from some people, she stood up, she held her head up high, and she told the truth. Because ultimately, she is a truth seeker. And in today's world, that is very rare. But to be a truth seeker and also someone who wants to shout that truth from the rooftops is even rarer. And when involved in movements where money and power is so readily available, to walk away from those movements, to join us, and reject all of that simply to pursue the truth, that is a truly remarkable and special characteristic. And this lady is a truly remarkable and special woman. Of course, I am talking about Dionne Moller. And as she comes up, I want to say, before you give her the round of applause she deserves, I was so nervous in the last few days that our foreign speakers weren't going to make it. And I've said this before, that the women in our movement are the ones that never let us down. They always show up. And this woman is like a rock in this movement. And she was at that airport. She was there. There was only 50 people there. She didn't flinch once. I never doubted her. She has a will of iron. Please give her the round of applause she so rightfully deserves.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Mark. Thank you for the kind words. Hello, everybody. My name is Dionne Moller, for those that don't know me. I'm a housewife. I'll give you a very, very short insight into my life up to now, for those of you that don't know anything about me. I was born in Leicester, in England, to an English father and a Danish mother. I'm an ex-British police officer. I served as a constable for Leicestershire Constabulary. I have numerous commendations received from senior officers. I've been awarded a Chief Constable's Commendation for Outstanding Service, and I am the recipient of a Bravery Award given to me by the then Prime Minister at No. 10 Downing Street. I moved to Denmark in 1999, where I married. I became a mother to my beautiful children, who are now young adults. When I accepted Mark Collett's invitation to speak at this conference, I began to question myself as to what on earth I could offer to such a meeting. To be in the company of so many well-read, knowledgeable people and having to make a speech can feel a little bit intimidating. I don't have years of political experience like Mark Collett. I'm not clued up on demographics as much as Laura Towler, and nor am I a deep thinker like millennial woes. But I don't have to be. What I have to be is concerned about what I see happening in the UK and Europe. And what I have to be is concerned that my people, white people, are being replaced and will, in my lifetime, become a minority in their own countries. What I have to be is concerned for my children's future and the generations of my family to come. And so, because I am concerned about all of those things, I thought it appropriate to share an experience from my past. As I've already told you all, I was a police officer for Leicestershire Constabulary, and as such, I've seen things that people shouldn't see and experienced things that have left a mark on me. Incidents that I have attended have shaped me and made me who I am today. I will not apologise for the graphic content of this speech, because life is graphic. And it is time that we all accept the consequences of the actions of some people in our society. Actions caused by people that have lost their moral compass, and a society that is becoming depraved and accepting of low personal and community standards, and a society that accepts the crimes caused by devout religious beliefs and customs. Police officers often see the very worst side of human nature. And with the rise in violent crime seen today, we can literally see the decline of our society before our very eyes. Of course, there will always be tragic accidents that occur. The sight of a forgotten old man, dead and literally melted into a chair, and having to peel him from it, left a mark on me. As did attending an industrial accident where two men were baked alive in an industrial bread oven. Attending such incidents, such as suicides by hanging or by overdose, by self-harm or by any other manner of disposing of one's own life, is a very normal everyday event for any police officer. Fatal road traffic accidents, dead children, abused children, aggravated burglary, stabbings, pub brawls, rapes, car chases, theft, deception, bloated corpses floating in rivers, the result of heroin abuse, the result of alcoholism, and murder in many forms are all signs of the decay of our society. And all have left their mark on me. But strangely enough, through the thousands of incidents I attended, I only ever shed one tear over anything I witnessed as a police officer. I did not shed a tear for any of the dead children, nor for any of the battered wives, not for any of the rape victims or the families of the suicide victims, not for the melted man in the chair or the men baked alive in the oven. There was only ever one tear shed because of an incident that I attended, and I will tell you about this incident because it has plagued me and played on my mind for 25 years, and the question of why I shed that tear. In recent months, the mystery of that tear has been solved. For the majority of my police career, I worked on the Melton Road area in Leicester. The Melton Road is an area just outside the city centre and was made up of a very, very large percentage of ethnic minorities at the time, Sikhs, Hindus, Muslims and Afro-Caribbeans, all living in the same community. One early evening, I was called to an incident at an address in Melton Road. I entered a terraced house and walked up the stairs. At the top of the stairs lay the body of a middle-aged man. He was covered in so much blood that it looked like he was wearing a burgundy-coloured suit. He was dead. I walked along the corridor to an open doorway which led into the bathroom. I stopped at the doorway and peered into what I can only describe as a slaughterhouse. I'd never seen so much blood before. It was sprayed up the walls on both sides of the room. It was in puddles before my feet. There were bloody footprints and places where the feet that had trodden in the blood had slid and created smears. The sink, the toilet, and the bath were sprayed in blood. Everywhere I looked, there was blood. In this bathroom was a window, an old-style sash window. Its frame was painted white. Slumped beneath this window was the body of a teenage girl. Her long hair was matted with blood, her slashed clothes drenched in blood. She too was dead. What I saw next stayed with me, burned into my memory for the last 25 years and will stay with me for the rest of my life. The white painted sash window was bloody. There was blood halfway up each side of the frame, and the sash was completely stained red with blood. The wooden sash had visible claw marks in it. There were bloody handprints on the glass. These handprints had been smeared downwards, leaving a trail of blood from the middle of the panes of the glass to the bottom of the window frame. These bloody handprints belonged to the girl who had tried to claw her way out of the window. I don't think she had known that the window had been nailed shut. The bloody handprints that had created the smears down the glass were the physical remnants of a life on the verge of extinction, the girl's last effort to escape. An investigation was conducted, and it was established that this had been a so-called honour killing. The dead man at the top of the stairs was the girl's father, who, after slaughtering his own daughter in a frenzied attack, had killed himself. The girl had sustained 18 puncture wounds and 7 slash wounds to her torso, back and face. The investigation concluded that the girl had gone against her religious Muslim upbringing and had been involved in a romantic affair with a man from a lower caste. The caste system is a division of a society into distinct social classes. Economics, social status, occupation and education levels are some of the factors used to divide a society into castes. People from higher castes are forbidden to have romantic relationships with those from lower castes. This practice is known as varnas and has been found in texts written more than 1900 years ago. And so it was this girl's crime to have fallen in love with the wrong person for which she paid with her life. When I returned home from work that evening, I shed that tear. 25 years later, I now know why that tear was shed. And as harsh as it might sound, the tear was not for the dead girl. I understand now that the tear was shed for me, and it was shed for all of you. I had realised all those years ago what Islam was. I realised that it was not a religion of peace, but one of cruelty and intolerance, even for its own people, even for its own children. I had realised that these people were not like me. They did not possess the same moral compass as I did, and that they would sometimes be forced to choose between the love for their own children or their devotion and adherence to a strict religious dogma. My tear was one of anger and one of frustration and one of disbelief. My tear was a symbol of the recognition that my people, my own kind, are in the United Kingdom and Europe, required to accept and be tolerant of religions that slaughter children and beat and rape women. We are taught to be tolerant when Muslim families cut off their daughters' clitorises. And now we even have hospitals in the UK assisting in this procedure. More than 11,000 cases of so-called honour crime were recorded by UK police forces from 2010 to 2014. The figures revealed 11,744 incidences of honour crimes, consisting of data from 39 out of 52 police forces in the UK reported within a 4-year period. They included forced child marriage and female genital mutilation. The Metropolitan Police recorded the highest number of incidents at 2,188, followed by the West Midlands Police with 1,269, Bedfordshire Police with 1,106 examples recorded. South Yorkshire had 1,009 unconfirmed incidents in 2014 alone, whilst Lancashire Police had 1,049. Society will today have us believe that diversity is progressive, that multiculturalism is the way forward, that we should open our arms and embrace the hundreds of thousands of immigrants flooding our countries. My view is that there is nothing progressive about the ancient barbaric practices of Islam. There is nothing progressive about brutal machete attacks, suicide bombers, or disfiguring people with sulfuric acid. I encourage people to look behind this wave of forced immigration to the West and ask themselves who or what lies behind it. I ask them to question the motives of the politicians who enforce and endorse mass immigration into Europe. I ask them to delve into history and find the origins of these events. The answers to my questions are easily found, but often result in people accusing me of being anti-Semitic and racist. When I read articles in the newspapers and see videos on social media about the effects of diversity in the West, and read the negative comments left by people who have read or watched the same information, I see tears. When I read articles about the effects of political correctness and read the angry comments from people that are attached to these articles, I also see tears. Every single angry comment is a tear. Every comment of frustration is a tear. And slowly, we are all creating a type of internal bank account, not filled with money, but filled with tears, filled with negative emotion. But this fills me with hope. These negative comments, these angry and frustrated comments are all signs of hope, because people do not have these emotions unless they care. People like Billy Charlton, who made an angry speech in a northern British town about the lack of action from a Labour council over the rape of a young woman by immigrants, was jailed for 21 months. He made that speech because he cares. The comments and reactions from ordinary, everyday people to the jailing of Billy Charlton were quite rightly ones of anger. The people who wrote these angry comments in response to and in support of Billy Charlton are people who care. Every single angry comment is a drop of hope. Every single angry comment you read to YouTube videos on Facebook, BitChute and Twitter about the state of the UK and Europe in relation to immigration and political correctness is a drop of hope. Every angry comment directed at those who kill and maim, rape and torture because of their perceived rights afforded to them by the practice of an ancient foreign religious custom is a drop of hope. Our internal bank accounts are filled with these drops of hope, and they are brimming over. We are so full of anger and frustration that we have searched for each other, online and in real life. We feel that we need to be amongst our own people. We have begun to gather together. We have begun to organise. When the time is right, we will be so organised that each of us will be able to cash in these internal accounts for something very, very real. Our anger and frustration can be transformed into currency, the currency of power. This war will not be won on the streets in clashes with Antifa. This war will be won politically and by the use of intelligence and timing. When the time comes, we will be able to cash in our internal accounts for a vote. Not for the Conservatives or the Labour Party or the Green Party, but for this movement. There is no other group in the United Kingdom that talks about the cause of our current problems. There is no other group in the United Kingdom that will strive to stop the insanity we see every day on television and social media. No other group will strive to put our people first. None. I am sick to death of seeing videos on Twitter of our people being beaten, sick to death of reading accounts of children being raped and nothing is done. Inquiry after inquiry into corruption and government dealings are held using taxpayers' money. Months and months go by, year after year, and nothing is done. Inquiry after inquiry into Muslim rape gang scandals have been held. Nobody has been held to account for the rape of the thousands upon thousands of raped British white girls. Nobody. It seems to me that after every inquiry into rape gangs or inquiries into governments are made, that more and more people are outed as criminals, rapists, abusers and traitors, people that sit in high office and people that should have the welfare of our people as top priority are those who corrupt the system or abuse our children. Promise after promise is made by politicians who haven't got the spine to protect their own people. These are the people that time and time again are being elected into office, and enough is enough. Too many white people have suffered at the hands of these corrupt politicians. Too many of our people have suffered at the hands of diversity and inclusion. I stand here today because I care. I care about my family. I care about you and I care about your families. I stand here today because I will not fail my children and I will not fail your children. We are the true defenders of the United Kingdom and Europe, and we shall ignore the hateful smears on our good characters. We shall be honest about who and what we are. We, as true nationalists, shall stand together as one. We shall aid and assist our kith and kin to create strong communities. We shall uphold our high moral standards and we shall aim to fight degeneracy in all its forms. We shall protect our heritage. We will not bow or bend to Islam nor any other religion that seeks the demise of white people. Our Christian, Catholic, and pagan beliefs will continue to be the prevalent faiths in the United Kingdom and Europe, and we shall continue to practice our customs and traditions with a sense of pride. We shall continue to fight for and protect the sovereignty of our European countries. We shall acknowledge and be proud of the achievements of our ancestors, and we shall secure the existence of white people and a future for our white children. Thank you.